All this picking yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, on Friday. Happy Friday, America. Let's all get out and party. Well, let's all have as much fun as we can at home this weekend. It's here, baby.
All right.
We have a fantastic show planned for you today. DeMarcus Lawrence, the Dallas Cowboys defensive end. We're going to pull up at his crib, talk some Cowboys football with him. Stick around at the end of the show. I have the most fearless take of the day about Michael Jordan and LeBron James in their Last Dance documentary. But we're going to start by rolling out to the Bay Area and welcoming in Rick Bucher back to the show. And we're going to start. Rick's our NBA expert, but Rick's a journalist, has covered everything. And we're going to start with my coronavirus sports world MVP. This should come as no surprise if you watch the show regularly. It's Roger Goodell and the National Football League. Last night, the NFL released its NFL schedule for the 2020 season. Gave us plenty to talk about and plenty to speculate about. The opening week schedule looks amazing. My Kansas City Chiefs are going to open the season at Houston against Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes. But more than the schedule to me, last night was further clarification, further proof that Roger Goodell has owned the last 2 to 3 months of the sports world. Look, there hasn't been anything going down. The sports world has shut down. But Roger Goodell and the NFL have owned this crazy pandemic time when we're all sitting at home, worried about our future, wondering what the future is going to look like, sitting at home with nothing to do. The NFL and Roger Goodell soldiered on, despite people criticizing them, first by having free agency happen when it did, on schedule and on time. There were people that said, this is the biggest disgrace since the NFL played after John F. Kennedy's assassination. Roger Goodell soldiered on. Then there were critics when Roger soldiered on with the NFL draft. Blood on the streets, according to some critics, and how dare the NFL continue on. Last night, continued on with the release of the schedule. Some people, why are they releasing the schedule? We don't know if they have a season. Because this is what men do. They soldier on in the face of adversity. You don't shut down every damn thing and just sit in a corner and wait for a chaos to be over. You soldier on as men. That's why, to me, men and women, you soldier on. That has been the history of America. That's why Roger Goodell, to me, has stood the tallest during this coronavirus pandemic, the NFL reasserting its importance and its place in the American pop culture and landscape, sports importance. I just thought last night was the final tip of the hat to Roger Goodell in terms of, this is a guy that's been under some scrutiny for the last 5 years because of his handling of the personal conduct policy, because of some off-the-field issues as it relates to NFL players. Roger Goodell, to me, has been the big winner during this coronavirus in reshaping his image and, to me, proving he is the leader of all leaders in the sports world. If Adam Silver in the NBA had soldiered, and again, they can't continue to play games, but if Adam Silver and him had done the exact same thing as Roger Goodell, continue with what they could, he would be celebrated as the greatest commissioner in the history of the sports world. But because it's just Roger Goodell and it's the NFL, I have to say it. The rest of the media maybe will jump on board. But Roger Goodell, my clear coronavirus MVP, love what the NFL did last night. Love what they've done this entire offseason. Love the fact that Roger Goodell has stood up to his critics and done the right thing by his league and by, I think, American sports fans. All right, Marcellus, any disagreements or any thoughts on who has stood the tallest during this coronavirus pandemic in the sports world?
Well, Jason, you just said the rest of the media may follow suit. Well, here's the first domino to fall. I'm agreeing with you. It's Roger Goodell for several reasons. And one of them takes me back to some John Wooden quotes I've heard and many other coaches regurgitate, which is, in adverse situations, the guys who can stay the same, keep it as close to normal as possible are the ones who shine the brightest. And it's almost counterintuitive because usually when you face adversity or a big moment of leverage, you try to do more. But Roger Goodell said, no, we're just going to keep this status quo. We're going to keep our normalcy. And I think that him leading the greatest sport in our country on top of keeping things on schedule, that can't be diminished and that shouldn't be denied. Now, also, let's talk about the makeover in terms of humanizing Roger Goodell and humanizing the NFL. As you mentioned, the last 5 years, a lot of disciplinary issues that made people scratch their head at the NFL, maybe turn a little squint at the NFL, not necessarily in full favor of what the NFL was doing. But think about what the draft did in terms of the record viewing, 55 million people at home who were at home just like the same draft prospects that were now transitioning into the NFL. So it humanized Roger Goodell sitting on that chair or looking at that Zoom board of fans. It humanized them because it made us all feel like we were a part of the process. No longer this spectacle that was isolated for just 300 guys. It was for the masses, and I think that helped in his makeover. And if you finally want to look at this in totality, the NFL, according to all schedules, looks like it's still going to be on pace to open its doors, not only for its services, but for fans to enjoy come September. Like you said, the schedule release, also more condiments on this. But basically, Roger Goodell, without much competition, has certainly won this offseason.
Roger Goodell is not my MVP in the sports world since the coronavirus hit us. But I will say, and I agree with you guys, that no one has done more to transform the perception of them and elevate their profile. I agree 1,000% in that he has been able to humanize himself and he has been a great leader. But I'm going to go with Mark Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, as my MVP because he was the first owner hours after the league shut down, who said, I am going to take care of the hourly workers that are going to be affected by this shutdown. I'm going to make sure that they are going to be taken care of. He's the first owner to say, you know what, opening up practice facilities next week or whenever is just not worth it at this point. He agreed to be on an advisory board for the president, even though he's not a Trump supporter. He has been providing advice to small businesses about how they can access federal loans. Every step of the way, look, Mark Cuban is a maverick in more ways than one, but every step of the way, he has been assertive and clear, and he has been thinking about people beyond the sports world that are being affected, that are less advantaged, less privileged than he is. And I just give him high marks for the way that he has approached all that. I agree with you. Roger Goodell has done a tremendous job. But for me, what Mark Cuban, the way he has stood up and stepped forward, I commend him. It's not a surprise, but it certainly is commendable.
All right. Listen, Rick, I can't rebuke anything you said. I can't reject it. Again, I think what Roger Goodell has done has been more impressive, and I'll further elaborate here in a second. But I agree with you. I think what Mark Cuban has done as an owner has put him in a good light. I've been someone who's been critical of Mark Cuban, but I think his maverick tendencies are paying dividends for him and his league, and his leadership has stood tall. Not going to dispute that. But when we talk about football and the importance of football, he's just on the wrong platform. Football is the most powerful platform we have in all of sports. It's the most powerful thing we have in all of popular culture. And I go back this week, I saw a picture that Tony Barnhart, longtime college football writer, he tweeted out a picture of a 1918 Georgia Tech football game where it was during the Spanish flu, a terrible pandemic that shocked the world and shocked the United States. And when I saw this picture, it just reminded me again of the importance of football and not to diminish any other sport. But when I just think about a group of different people coming together to participate in the sport, tall people, short people, fat people, fast people, strong people, people that are weak. Football brings everyone together, and football's importance in American society has just gotten stronger and stronger and stronger, but it's always been there going back to, and I actually, before even seeing this picture, I'd actually looked up what happened to college football and football during the Spanish flu. Seeing this picture just hammered home to me again, the importance of football, the importance of bravery and not backing down in the face of crisis. Again, I'm someone that's tried to stay out of the shutdown debate. Have we gone too far with the lockdown? I'm no expert. I'm no doctor. I've tried to stay out of it. But just my instincts as a man, as an athlete, and as a former football player, I'm kind of pro taking risks. And I'm kind of pro not letting anything stopping me from moving forward. And that's what I think the NFL and Roger Goodell and football have done here. And that's why I tip my hat to Roger Goodell and call him my MVP.
Yeah, just to add to that, here's a couple of tiebreakers for me as well. Maybe this will sway you, Rick. There's an unintended consequence, a blessing in disguise that happened this offseason during the corona pandemic for the NFL, for Roger Goodell. And that was the new draft format. No one saw that coming, and no one saw the rewards of that. Not only humanizing Roger Goodell and many of the players, but also giving it a greater gathering experience. Let's not forget that the NFL already owns one day of the week and leases a couple others. They own Sunday and they lease a couple other days in terms of our imagination and our destination when it comes to viewing. So like Lupe Fiasco once said, did you improve on the design? Did you do something new? No other league can say that except the NFL. We actually improved on the design. And they're now using some of that big business talk in terms of, yeah, this offseason was a great learn for us. You know what that means? We're going to morph what we saw this year in the draft, what was going forward next year. So they've improved on their product, and that's hard to beat.
Yeah, I don't know that you're going to convince me to leave Mark Cuban in this argument, but and again, it's not a big fight that I have. I'm not resisting the idea that Roger Goodell has been great. I would say that the broadcast of the draft, you have to give a tip of the cap as much to the NFL Network and ESPN and how well that went off. I love that Roger Goodell still invited the whole idea of booing the commissioner. That, to me, humanized him and made him personable, along with just seeing him worn out sitting in his big leather chair. I loved all of that. But ultimately, I not only like leaders and I like being decisive and I like taking risks. I'm one of those too. But I also like being smart and taking smart risks. And Mark Cuban has been very forward-thinking in terms of how do we make the best decisions, not just for our sport, but our entire country. And it's great that we have the diversion of the draft and the promise of football coming back. But ultimately, we have to see if that happens. Mark Cuban making sure that people are still going to have a dollar in their pocket and that they're not worried about whether they're going to be able to eat next week, to me, is what puts him over the top, because he's thinking beyond the sport. He's thinking about how do I just take care of people that are in my purview. He is taking care. If you shop local in Dallas, he is helping pay if you're helping support local businesses. I just love the whole mindset where he approached this issue and said, how can I be a proponent for doing the right thing?
I'm going to end on this note, and this is not a shot at Mark Cuban, Rick, but I also think he's running for president in 2024. So I think that explains some of his actions. All right, great job, Rick. Stick around. We're going to go out to Cowboy Land and be joined by a Pro Bowler and one of the highest paid defensive players in football, DeMarcus Lawrence, from his crib. One of the hot boys doing great work during this coronavirus. All right, stick around. Speak for yourself from the crib. Presented by Hyundai. More after this.
That's my dog.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's roll out to Dallas, Texas. Let's join a Pro Bowl defensive end, a Dallas Cowboys star, DeMarcus Lawrence. DeMarcus, thanks for joining us. Let's get right to it. All right, you signed a long-term deal in 2019 with the Cowboys, but in 2018, you had to play under the franchise tag. What was that pressure like playing a year under the franchise tag?
Oh, yeah. Just looking back on it, I feel like it was a lot of pressure. Just going into the season, knowing, like, you only have 1 year left to prove yourself. And you don't know where you're going to be the next season. But it is also a blast for me to find myself and really bet on myself and understand that I have more in the tank to give.
What advice, this was a setup question, what advice would you give Dak Prescott if he's forced to play this coming year under a franchise tag? Do you think it could impact his performance?
I really don't have no advice, you know, for another man. I mean, he has to make his own decision. You know, I think he has some good leadership counsel in his corner. So I feel like he'll do the right thing and, you know, he'll get paid.
Well, what happened to the Cowboys last season? We see the talent on the roster, obviously, including yourself, but then not making the playoffs, 8-8 record. What happened to the Cowboys?
Yeah, I really think this all comes down to knowing who you are and just focusing on, you know, what's in front of you. You know, had so many obstacles come our way and, you know, it kind of divided us as a team. And, you know, we worrying about this or other things around us instead of worrying about, you know, sticking to our job and sticking with the coach and, you know, finding a way to win. So I feel like we didn't capitalize on a lot of opportunities we had as well.
Now, I'm going to preface this next question by telling you I'm the wrong person to ask this, but also the perfect person to ask this in terms of you, DeMarcus Lawrence. You had 25 combined sacks last 2 years, and then last year, only 5 sacks. So I've been there before. I understand it, but I want to hear from you. What happened to you last year?
I mean, really nothing that happened to me last year. I know I finished the season with 5 sacks, you know, but I also, you know, helped other players, you know, boost their numbers back up to double digits. So it's not a one-man game. And I know how to, you know, play the game the right way. I know how to, you know, make plays when the plays come to my way. And I also know how to make sure my teammates are making their plays when it's their opportunity. So trust me, you ain't got to worry about nothing. Set number will be back up.
Hey, like I said, I'm the perfect person for that question. Understanding that it's more than just sacks. That said, they do count sacks, and they count it more than any other category. So this offseason, being a bounce-back offseason, how are you preparing? Anything different?
I mean, right now, you know, during this quarantine, I've really been, you know, focusing on, you know, my faith, my family, and football. And what I've been doing is, you know, doing little workouts with the kids. Just trying to, you know, spend more time with them that I wouldn't have if we was back in football right now. So I'm doing all I can with them and also trying to keep up with their energy. it's tremendous. So just being able to keep up with them, I know I can keep up with the young kids that just came out of the draft.
Now, no, I'm not trying to set you up to take shots at Jason Garrett, who's a fellow Ivy Leaguer, my dog. But what are you expecting out of your new coach, Mike McCarthy, that you didn't get out of Jason Garrett?
I mean, so Jason Garrett, I only had one head coach in my NFL career. But just being able to meet Mike McCarthy and understand, you know, the type of formula that he's trying to bring into Cowboy Nation, I'm very excited. I'm very excited about the draft picks. Very excited about, you know, the whole coaching change and being able to be under new wings and new leadership and, you know, see where it goes from there. I mean, I'm just ready to play football, period.
Say it.
DeMarcus, we were talking off camera and you mentioned about how you're working out basically in your backyard. This has been a very unique offseason for every NFL player. Tell us what you got a gym in your backyard. How are you preparing individually for this season?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I was fortunate enough to get paid before you know, the pandemic happened. So I'm well set up on gym equipment, a little space where I can do band resistant runs. You know, you know, work out with the kids, run around them circles. So, I mean, it's just all about, you know, just taking the time out and just doing something every day and, you know, making sure you're doing it, you know, with effort and understanding what you're doing.
You mentioned also that it does creep into your mind a little bit, the uncertainty of whether we're even going to have a season this coming year. How does that impact your focus and intensity on the workouts? Is it harder to stay focused with so much uncertainty about this upcoming season?
Oh, most definitely. You know, that uncertainty come in once you don't have that schedule or that regiment that you usually have of getting up at 7:30 in the morning. Now I can sleep until, you know, 10 or 12 if I wanted to. So it's all about, you know, having that regimen and really, you know, keeping that focus mentality of, you know, if season does come back or it don't, you know, you still make sure you place yourself in a position to, you know, be the best defensive player in the league.
Cowboys have made a couple of very interesting offseason moves. Obviously, they've signed Andy Dalton to back up Dak Prescott. But on the defensive side, and maybe the most interesting move of the offseason, the Cowboys signed Aldon Smith and bring him back to life in the NFL. Do you know Aldon? Have you met Aldon? Have you reached out to him? And how difficult will it be to return to being a great pass rusher after sitting out for 4 years?
Yes, I mean, you know, it's a great opportunity, you know, for Aldon to come in, you know, be back under some of his old coaches and get another opportunity. I mean, you never can, you know, knock a man for, you know, getting another opportunity or wanting that opportunity. And I mean, like Aldon was also always, you know, a good defensive lineman. So, I mean, I don't think you forget that type of intensity or how to rush.
A large conversation is happening around Dallas about the quarterback position. I want to get your mindset since you're an elite player yourself. When you get a very capable, if not good, backup, and that's what's happening at your quarterback position with Dak Prescott and Andy Dalton, what's the mindset when you know the guy behind you is really close to being right there with you?
I mean, I think it picks up your intensity of, you know, pushing yourself to limits that you didn't know you can go. Like with me in my situation, I had Randy Gregory right on my hip, and you know, the Cowboys brought in Greg Hardy or more people, and it brought, you know, more focus out of me, and it made me want to, you know, tune up my engine so I can, you know, be better than anybody. Period. So I feel like it'll help, you know, that you know, explode into his career and, you know, get the contract that he's looking for.
DeMarcus, before we let you get out of here, tell us about the Hot Boys and some of the charity work you guys have been doing during this coronavirus.
Yeah, so me and the Hot Boys, first off, we wanted to, you know, make sure we was explaining that we're more than just a name or more than just a team. We wanted to live outside of that and, you know, make sure we put our stamp into the community. And, you know, we raised over $35,000, you know, for small business owners. You know, then we don't hand it out over 1,000 meals to, you know, the local first responders. And now we're working on our, you know, our second phase of, you know, making masks, getting masks out to our first responders and also feeding the young kids out of school. So we still got a lot of work to do, but, you know, we're out here trying to give a helping hand and make sure, you know, our community is well fed and, you know, everybody is okay.
Hey, Marcellus, do we know if DeMarcus got this hot boy's name cleared with Birdman and Cash Money and Lil Wayne? any copyright infringement here? Or y'all doing any rapping,
DeMarcus? I'm texting Lil Wayne right now. I'm going to text Lil Wayne right now. I don't know. You better really be good in the community to start sharing that name, man. You got to go get it. Respect, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I want to, you know, make sure I leave it on that note. With Hot Boys, definitely comes with football first. I mean, if we don't live up to the name, you know, on that field, we don't deserve to call ourselves Hot Boys, and I make sure that happens this year, sure.
Thank you, DeMarcus. Good luck this season. All right, stick around. LeVar Arrington's just around the corner. We're going to keep our NFL conversation rolling. The Ravens, are they moving towards exiting out of the Earl Thomas business because of this latest story on TMZ? All right, speak for yourself.
One of the greatest defensive players in NFL history, Bruce Smith, from his crib. You played three seasons with Marcellus Wiley. What's your fondest memory of tutoring Marcellus?
Man, every day was an experience. This young brother was such a joy to be around. Man, it was just a fun and exciting time, even at that stage when Marcellus came and they actually drafted him to take my job. You know, most people didn't know that. But instead of looking at, I call him my son, as a threat, I said, it's time for me to pass this knowledge on so this man can have a productive life and make all the money he possibly can and make a name for himself. So that's what this was all about.
Love it, man. Long story short, there's only one Bruce Smith, so he didn't have any concerns about passing on the knowledge. There was only going to be one, number 78, man.
Well, I'm at the Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai, Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley on Friday.
Back.
Great job, John Heller, with that inbox. All right, let's roll out to LeVar Arrington's crib. Keep the NFL conversation rolling.
Such Earl a cute Thomas intro, guys.
In the news, the Baltimore Ravens safety in the news for not the best reasons. TMZ reporting and court documents showing that at some point a month ago or so, Earl Thomas's wife confronted him with a gun, a loaded gun, and pointed it to his head when she and two friends busted in on Earl Thomas and his brother with women. And anyway, it's a complicated story, but his wife was arrested. Earl Thomas was not arrested. But there are reports the Baltimore Ravens may use the incident to see if they can get out of the final years of Earl Thomas's contract. There's further reports that Earl Thomas clashed with teammates, freelanced too much, got crossways with teammates because of that, wasn't as prepared as he should be. All right, you two guys, former NFL stars. Marcellus, would you blame the Baltimore Ravens if they use this latest incident as an excuse to exit their relationship with Earl Thomas?
Yeah, I would blame them. I think they would be wrong to do it. Look, cheating on your wife, it's immoral, but it's not illegal. So you look at a situation like this, it would be a great reach to say that Earl Thomas and his issues with his family will be issues with his football family. That's the only logical connection I could see a general manager or owner making. You don't take care of your own family, or you do this to your own family, what would you do to your football family? But that's a tremendous reach. I'm gonna just tell you how it is in the locker room and being a player rep for 9 of 10 years. And I was privy to work with our security department, ex-FBI, the general manager, the owner, as well as being in the locker room around the other 52 guys when I knew their indiscretions. And there's three levels to this. There's the incident. There's the incident that the team knows about. And then there's the incident that the team knows about that now the entire public knows about. And they usually get three different punishments. And in this situation, because we went to the full extent that everyone knows, and think about it, it's been a month or two So did Earl Thomas even communicate with the Ravens before? Is this just outside public pressure, or is this really at its core a true issue on this team? But I would blame the Ravens if they took it to the point where they didn't want Earl Thomas anymore just because of this incident.
I don't blame them from the business side of it. And here's the reason why. And I know Marcellus, but here's the reason why I'm not going to blame them. Because they're already trying to unload them. It sounds as though that the reports are saying that they already are trying to figure out a way to part ways and sever ties with the player. So when you look at what Earl's situation is, I will say it's very irresponsible. Whoever leaked it out and put it out there from the Ravens organization that this is what they were intending to do, I will hold them culpable for that. But for them to try to figure out within the parameters of the contract, is there a way they can get from underneath $20 million or possibly $10 million of dead cap space if they were to part ways with somebody that they don't want? On the business side of it, no, I don't blame them for that.
Yeah, I'll say this, as I have mixed emotions, because Earl Thomas's wife got arrested. She escalated this thing to the point of criminality, and Earl Thomas is being blamed for that. But where I will defend the Baltimore Ravens and what I know about employers is that when you're getting paid a great sum of money and you have a high place of responsibility, what they like are people, men and women, who have a very responsible, stable personal life, because they also believe, and I think there's scientific data proof, that if you're in a stable relationship, if you're in a family, married, kids, you're actually more productive, more reliable, a more responsible employee. And so I think the Ravens are looking at this and going, wow, we had a guy that wasn't assignment sound, freelance, clashed with some of our players. Again, the spark between he and his wife, they said, it started with an argument over his drinking. And so to me, this is the Ravens saying Earl Thomas handling his personal life irresponsibly is leaking over into his professional life and being irresponsible there. And now I think we have a more complete understanding of why the Seattle Seahawks moved on from Earl Thomas. And I think now we have an understanding why when he got hurt and was giving everybody the finger as he exited the field, that Earl Thomas, a bit irresponsible in his personal life, chaotic in his personal life, and it bleeds over into his professional life. I say this, and I just want to repeat, Earl Thomas's wife did the criminal acts, and she is mostly to blame. But eventually, who you partner with says a lot about yourself as well. And I know both of you guys know that because you're living that.
Yeah, I mean, look, you say it's leaked into his professional life, what's going on in his personal life, or it bled into it. That must be a slow drip, a hella slow drip. The dude was in the Pro Bowl last year. They can say whatever they want to clean up the money, and now they have an out. But in reality, Earl Thomas was out there balling. Maybe not to his heights, but certainly enough to be one of the recognized special players in the NFL last year. So if we want to really start sweeping the locker room for adulterers, all you're going to be left with is a punter and a backup center and maybe a couple other guys to hold some water bottles. Like, let's not do this, because the Hall of Fame is littered with adulterers. I don't believe that it connects to the other. I've seen too many great players who were a mess as a person, but were a beast as a player, and they hit that switch. So for whatever happens in his personal life, I don't have much material evidence to say that it's ever affected the future Hall of Famer in Earl Thomas. So I think it opens Pandora's box if we want to say we're going to come down with a heavy hand on you, Earl Thomas. Going to be a lot of other guys in that locker room very nervous if that's going to be the new standard.
All right, stick around. We're going to talk about another great defensive player, Jadeveon Clowney. Should the Seahawks still want Jadeveon Clowney? He's come down on his contract demands. The market's not out there for him. But should they still want Jadeveon Clowney? Speak for yourself. From the Crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself. From the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Happy Friday. All right, we're going to rejoin by LeVar Arrington. Let's talk about Jadeveon Clowney, probably the biggest free agent on the defensive side of the football, maybe the defensive version of Cam Newton. No one seems to want Jadeveon Clowney, particularly not at his price. Reports are Jadeveon Clowney has come down in his price, and it looks like the Seattle Seahawks are the perfect place for him to rejoin that team. But my question here is, if Jadeveon Clowney signs a contract that doesn't meet his original expectations, should the Seattle Seahawks still want Jadeveon Clowney? I'm not sure if I'd want a guy who's not happy with his contract and only signing because he couldn't get it someplace else, what he was looking for. Marcellus, should the Seahawks still want to sign Jadeveon Clowney?
That's a great point. No, I don't think they should want to. Look. The caveat is, what is that number? Like, there were reports that the number was as high as $21 million. If the number is lower than the franchise tag, which is at 17.7, you start to have the conversation, but I don't end the conversation there. I say if Jadeveon Clowney wants $14 million, then he's a Seattle Seahawk. Anything higher than that, I have to call you back, and this is why. I grade him in terms of talent and ability as an A. But in terms of production, including availability, he's a B minus. You're just not getting all of the production you assume when you hear that name. Yes, he jumps out on film because he makes plays, tackle for losses, hurries, pass rushes. We get it. But in terms of full impact, I think Jadeveon Clowney, the name, is still a little greater than what you're going to get in the game. So, he played his cards. He didn't play them perfectly because he didn't get the deal he desired. It's now been shopped around the entire league to no buyers. I'm with you in terms of I have some reservation for a guy who couldn't get his top dollar and is not giving me top production.
You know, you can never have too many pass rushers on a team. And right now, they should want Jadeveon Clowney because he can help your team. Whether it's from a backup's role or from the starter's role, his leverage is pretty much gone at this point. As you mentioned, Whit, he had to lower his asking price. You gave out some numbers right there, Marcellus. To me, you can take this a whole lot lower in terms of what the going rate for Jadeveon would be at this moment. We talked about Cam. You mentioned Cam at the top of introducing the segment. Well, this is a situation where I think staying, sitting, and waiting would be a better option for Jadeveon Clowney, because where he stands right now, the Seattle Seahawks could sign him for basically next to nothing, just like any other team could sign him next to nothing, because they've shown that the market has spoken. The need is not tremendous for him, and the money is being spent on guys that are current players now. So it might be a better situation for him to sit and wait for somebody to get injured, because for his position, it's easier to implement a defensive end that just has to rush versus trying to do it with a quarterback that has to learn an entire playbook.
I think he scared a lot of teams off by starting out talking about 20-some-odd million when I don't think he's had a double-digit sack season. And so now what you have are teams all across the league, including the Seattle Seahawks, like, well, let's say we get Jadeveon Clowney at a bargain price of 12, 13, 14, 15 million. But if he's not happy, if he's looking across like, damn, Myles Garrett may get 25 million. Somebody else may be getting more than me. And there have always been questions about Jadeveon Clowney's motor. And will that motor start up if he doesn't feel like he's being paid properly? I think that's the question. Marcellus, we got about 30 seconds left. I'll give you the final say.
All I'm going to give you is the sack rates, and this is where you should get paid. Shaq Barrett, 108%. Basically, if he goes out there and starts a game, he's going to get a sack. You keep playing him, he's going to get maybe two sacks. Chandler Jones, 83%. Von Miller, 79%. Jadeveon Clowney, 44%. That means you put him out there and start, you're not even guaranteed a sack. Put him out there again, you may not get a sack. That's too low to be talking $20 million. Didn't play the cards right. All right, LeVar, I'm going to let you get in the kitchen. What you cooking this weekend? It's ribs day weekend. Baby. I'm sure you're cooking something special. Oh, all
right. Get some ribs right.
All right, yeah. Speak for yourself. From the crib presented by Hyundai, stick around. I've got a wit log that hopefully is going to set the world on fire. Nerds! Oh. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Happy Friday. All right, I have a final thought for you before we go. I want to reference or go back to the Michael Jordan documentary that has captivated us during this coronavirus deal. And I want to describe for you in detail what we're seeing from Michael Jordan and the Last Dance documentary. Michael Jordan sitting with a cigar, cocktail, sitting on camera, showing you toxic Michael Linity. And it's, I say toxic Michael Linity because it's toxic masculinity. It's a reference. This documentary is showing you what men used to be like and how Michael Jordan still is and how the sports world used to be toxically masculine. And it's a sports world that I love and prefer. And to me, when I look at Michael Jordan, bloodshot eyes, cigar, cocktail, sitting back, making no apologies for nothing. He still dislikes Isaiah Thomas. He has no problem. He punched Steve Kerr. He punched Will Perdue. He beat up everybody. He called out Scottie Pippen for being selfish. I'm just sorry. I love it. Flaws and all, I love it. And to me, it explains everything about the sports world that I miss. And really everything about American society that I miss. Men used to be allowed to just be men and just be toxically masculine. I think there's a responsible way to be masculine. I think Michael Jordan, for the most part, was responsibly masculine and still is to this day. I love this documentary because what it says about Michael and what it says about my generation. It also says a lot about this generation. And this is why I prefer Michael Jordan over LeBron James. We've moved to this very, and I'm not calling LeBron James, but we've moved to a very feminized, softer sports culture. And it's represented by LeBron James. Michael Jordan, this documentary has shown you that Michael Jordan was criticized for his gambling. He was questioned about nearly everything about him. Everything was questioned. We've never once heard Michael Jordan, oh, God, they're racist. Why are they questioning me? Why are they saying this or that? Michael Jordan took his critics on head on, handled them like a man. In this era, LeBron James steps out, who I like to call LeBlump. He's the black Donald Trump. He steps out, tweets something irresponsible, says something stupid, does his Trump impersonation over Twitter. Oh, my God, how can anybody say anything about LeBlanc James? Oh, my God, LeBron's a victim. No, LeBron did something inappropriate, got called out for it, quit all the damn whining, handled the thing like a man. You know what? He screwed up. Let's move on. But instead, we've created this whole groupie society where everybody's standing in line to kiss LeBron James's butt and make sure that they're first in line to give LeBron a foot massage. That ain't never been Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, his own man, self-aware, handled his own battles, didn't have other people, Matt Barnes, Kendrick Perkins, whoever, cape up for him. He handled it himself. That's what I respect about Michael Jordan. That's what I respect about toxic Michael Linity. We need more of it in the sports world. That's all I got. Enjoy your weekend. I'm gonna have a cocktail.